It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And it's been a little while. It's been nice.
It feels like it has been a minute.
It has, because we did a couple of Skype calls.
Yes, we did.
So
well,
not
you did.
Usually we'll do Skype calls like during the week, and I explained this on the JM DeMatteis show. It would be weird for you to just stand over my shoulder and go, "Yeah."
Yeah, no, I don't I want to listen to those. I don't want to the Skype calls would be weird to be in the room for that, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Usually we save those in the bank, and then the last couple weeks I was like, "Yeah, I got Skype call."
You know what that Skype call would be like? And what? I realized this just recently. I was watching Conan O'Brien. I don't know if you all know Jennifer. Everyone knows Jennifer Lawrence, but like this girl's.
Everyone knows Jennifer Lawrence and Conan O'Brien.
Incredibly lovely. But I was watching a skit of it, and I forget this guy exists, but there's like Conan O'Brien. It's a Conan O'Brien show, and he talks to guests. And then always next to the guest is sitting this like frumpy guy.
Andy Richter?
Yeah.
Andy Richter's brilliant.
No, I know, but he has kind of a weird job.
He does have a weird job. He has Ed McMahon's old job, which no one does anymore.
He just sits like, there, and he makes, like, dirty jokes.
He's the hype man.
Yeah, he's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, because Ed McMahon was the announcer, but then back when Johnny Carson did it, like, it was, like, 2 hours long.
Yeah.
So he would just kind of bounce off him. Because also, like, the band leader didn't talk. When Letterman started, he just started talking to the band leader. He started talking to Paul Schaefer.
Yeah.
And they eliminated that job.
And that's fine.
But Andy's really fun.
Because he's in the band, but that guy just kind of, like... He sits there, and then he just kind of, like, every once in a while says, like, a dirty little joke, and then it's like, ha, ha, ha.
And it always kills.
Yeah.
That's why he's there.
I guess. I don't know. I always saw a clip of it. I don't watch Conan O'Brien regularly. I just saw this one clip. And it just seemed like he was just this weird guy that, like, they owed money to. So they're like, oh, you have a job for life.
So you're saying that's you?
In the Skype calls. Yeah. I feel like I contribute to the regular show.
Because I was wondering if we'd do three-way Skype calls, and then I figured just downloading Skype for you would be terrifying.
I don't know anything about technology, and yeah.
All right, and Lauren is back, Geek Girl Chicago.
Good to be here. This room is significantly emptier than last time when I was
because
here. There
Dave's
was like
here?
Six people. No, there was two more
yeah.
people.
Oh,
yeah,
you're right. Yeah,
true.
I think
last
Dave
we had
was
a
here,
big,
Joe
we had a
was here.
I thought I was just super popular. They were like, "Oh, Geek Girl Chicago's coming.
Everyone
let's
wants
get in
to
that
be
room."
On.
You and are actually. I had to tell Joe and Dave. I was like, "Nah, let's just have three."
Because they were really disappointed.
Yeah,
Joe, Dave because he couldn't get out of work.
Yeah,
and then Joe just because he's
working for you right now.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody's got
to
work.
Yeah, and Joe wanted to be here, but I was like, you know, when it gets to four people, everybody's just talking on top of each other.
Well,
yeah.
You have successfully humbled my ego back down because now it's just us. So.
Yeah. And now you have a spotlight. That's
there
what
you go.
That's true. I don't. Have
we didn't
to share
want to water
my
you
mic.
Down with anybody else,
right? Because well, we also talked about doing this topic for a little while.
Yeah.
So
what topic is that, John?
Lauren.
Today's topic, I think. Is religion in comics. Woo.
Ah, yes. Ooh. This is a touchy subject, I
it
think.
It is, and we thought...
People
do,
go crazy
let's do it right
stuff.
Before Christmas and make everyone even angrier.
Yes, is this going
to
be the Christmas
people
podcast?
Are violently angry when someone says happy holidays to them.
Oh, I hate
so
that.
Let's talk about why there's no God in the Marvel Universe.
Oh, my goodness. Let's do that.
Well,
you know what God in the Marvel Universe is?
Thor?
No, yeah, Jack
Odin.
Kirby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mark Waid
Mark
showed
Waid.
That. That was one of the great moments of that fantastic run.
People didn't like that when it came
but
out.
When I was
they a, got a lot of backlash.
When I was a kid and I was reading Thor, I was in Catholic school and I realized if Thor and Odin and Loki are running around and they're real in this universe, that means Jesus isn't real. And I didn't know how to talk.
I
don't know if I subscribe to that. I would say like Jesus is just like Thor. Except he's not running around.
He didn't
around.
Join the Avengers.
Right, he didn't join the Avengers because they had Thor. They didn't need Jesus.
Yeah. Did you ever hear that Patton Oswalt bit about Jesus joining the Avengers?
No.
Oh,
no.
It's great. He did it at San Diego. He did a show at San Diego, and I'm not going to do the whole bit, but basically it was like, he comes in, he's like, can I join the Avengers? He's like, what can you do? He's like, walk on water, and I can turn fish into more fish.
And they
and
were just like,
no.
Yeah.
Oh,
really
no, and actually, it's him trying to join the Justice League. And they go, why don't you just join the Avengers? They got a guy with a bow and arrow.
Oh,
on that
you know what? Carmelo sent that to me because he's always ripping on Hawkeye because he's like, yeah, anyone who goes to like a used sporting goods store can be in a fucking Avenger. You just, the swordsman, Hawkeye, it's like all these like losers.
Although I will say, I was watching Justice League Unlimited with Ben and Green Arrow showed up. And he's like, oh, look, it's Green Arrow. And I said, who's better, Green Arrow or Hawkeye? He's like, Hawkeye, he's got the cool moves.
Yeah, Ben knows what's up. He's a smart kid.
He's a smart kid. He's watching Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom by himself right now.
Awesome.
I'm a bad parent.
No, you're a great parent.
You recognize
parenting done right.
People are ripping their hearts out. He was just making noise before we recorded, and I walked in, and it's like, it's the point that I always forget in that movie.
It's where super India's, scary.
Yeah, but India's hypnotized and strangling Short Round.
Yeah, he hits Short Round like
in
the face.
Oh, he slaps him really hard, and then he smiles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of menacing.
He's watching that alone.
That's fine.
You can recognize that your child is self-sufficient. That's real smart of you, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're doing
it right.
He's
watching Indiana Jones.
But religion and comics, yeah, man, people, it's like if you do too much of it, people are like, get that religion out of my comics. It's like politics and comics. They don't like it. They like,
yeah.
You know,
I like politics and comics because I love when it becomes political satire.
Yeah. But I had a lot of people
when Lex Luthor became president at the same time George W. Bush became president.
When who did?
Lex Luthor.
Oh, yeah. I know, right?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was great. He only lasted one term.
Nah, he didn't make it that long. Yeah, now it's like every president is like two terms. It's like a thing they do. It's like they like him so much.
Yeah, Lex Luthor, they impeached him when he put on the battle suit and started smashing cities.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we should have done that with George Bush when he...
I knew that was the next comment.
When he put on that flight suit and declared war on all those countries we shouldn't have gone to war with.
I would have liked to have seen George Bush in a big battle robot suit. I feel like that's where he was going.
No.
If we had the technology, it's like Futurama with Nixon in a. Didn't they put Nixon in a big robot suit?
Yeah, he's a head in a jar, and then
he has
later,
a robot body
a giant
that carries him
body.
Around. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he has a headless Spiro Agnew carrying him around. But I think there's one where they put him in a big robot.
Yeah,
battle suit.
Having just watched like all of Futurama for last week on Netflix because they added the new
season. Yeah, I was watching that too.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of those episodes. I'm like, that show is still good.
It is.
Unfortunately, those are the last ones.
Oh, that stinks. But why'd you have to do that?
It was
to me?
Great. Yeah.
I was just watching those, thinking about this podcast because in Futurama, Robot Hell is a literal place.
Yep. Yeah,
with the robot devil.
There.
Right,
yeah.
The robot devil. Yep.
And there's that great episode where Bender becomes God.
Uh huh.
Oh yeah.
Where the civilization grows on his body.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if it's maybe coincidence, but that's they did that in Planetary. They had like their version of Galactus is like this thing like floating in space that had died years ago. And it's a giant, and then he dies, and right, and then like they go and investigate like on his carcass, and they find like there's a head civilization, there's a chest civilization, there's like things living in his toes, and it's like it's the same kind of Bendery thing, but I don't know
which was first.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think
if
that's
it was
in the
referential.
And I think that's in the original Fox run, so that episode's a good 10 years old.
But Planetary, that issue's probably 10 years old, too.
I got to read Planetary, because I love Warren Ellis, and that's, like, his big thing.
And it was Cassidy at
his best. It's like Grant Morrison. I've never read The Invisibles. And there's this gigantic omnibus that's going to cost me $100, and I keep thinking, I should read that.
Someday.
Well, first, I should buy that, and then I should read it. Because there's no way you're going to let
me... Can't do it in reverse.
No, you're not going to let me sit in the store reading a 1,500-page omnibus.
I might.
But I won't be talking to you.
I won't.
There was some thought there, though. We had a moment to think about it.
I think you would let me, as long as I was queuing up more Netflix.
Yeah.
And I was like, you haven't seen this British series yet? Did you watch all The Office yet? The British Office?
Yeah, that one went quick.
Yeah,
that's only like 10 episodes or something.
You actually didn't know that existed.
I knew it existed. I didn't know... I guess I wasn't like clear on like, I thought it had gone longer or it had been around. I know what it was first, and that's kind of like we adapted it, but I just was blown away that like the American Office did like 12 seasons or whatever, and like British Office
did
like
12 episodes.
Yeah, and I thought that was wild.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, it's interesting because my favorite comparison is in the British one, the Jim and Pam characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't work out. And in the American version, it's...
They have two kids by the end of it,
You see their wedding, you see their kid,
they go through the whole...
And the last season, they have trouble and get back together at the end of it. Did they not work out? I thought they finally got together in that Christmas...
It's really
the Christmas special was the last thing.
At the very end, she comes back and she says, it didn't work out with my husband or boyfriend or whatever. Maybe you? And then it's just sort
ambiguous.
Of up to... It's up to the viewer.
I like a little ambiguity in my... television and
I will say the British Jim has a better career.
The what?
The British Jim has a better career than the American Jim.
Yeah, because American Jim kind of doesn't he just stay a salesman. I mean, he changes
at the very.
No, I mean as an actor.
Very end. Oh,
American Jim does a lot of indie movies and Martin Freeman's
and
Sherlock
I heard his voice
and
the
Hobbit.
Hobbit. Commercial once.
And he's in The World's End, which you need to see again.
Do you have it?
Oh yeah, I'll lend it to you.
I'll borrow it.
That's my favorite movie of 2013. The World's End.
I would say, I don't even know what I liked so much in 2013. I'd have to see a lot of them. And then they're not all out yet.
Well, there's still Anchorman 2. We all have to, we have to go to Anchorman 2.
And then,
2.
And
we
her?
Saw The Hobbit, but we're going to
see the trailer for Her. It's the Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, that's the origin of Plankton, isn't it?
I don't know what that means.
SpongeBob. Every time I see that, I'm like, this is how Plankton starts.
I don't know what Plankton
is. He's like an angry little guy who falls in love with his computer.
You know that he's a father.
Are you not young enough?
I'm
for SpongeBob?
When I was in high school.
You're not old enough to have kids who watch SpongeBob.
Right. When I was in high school, SpongeBob came out, and I remember seeing trailers and stuff for it. And I just remember being like, this is the worst garbage I've ever seen.
I know, it's great.
Yeah, it probably is. You know what? You know what? It's like Adventure Time, where it's like, ah, fuck Adventure Time, because it's not Dexter's Lab or whatever I grew up with.
Right.
But then I watched Adventure Time on Netflix. I'm like, this show is actually pretty awesome.
It's weird. I still don't get it. Ben watches it.
I don't know that
Adventure
I get
Time,
it.
Adventure Time is the thing that makes me feel very old. I watch it and I go, this is where children's sense of humor is right now, and I can't access it. And that's when I know adulthood has happened.
Yeah, I feel like both Adventure Time and Regular Show is Cartoon Network's attempt to do Adult Swim for kids. Like, take that Aqua Teen Hunger Force feeling and make it...
That oddity,
and
yeah.
Put it in the afternoon where kids are watching it. But I feel like Regular Show is done by people just on pot all the time.
And that's exactly what it is.
And Adventure Time are the ideas they come up with.
Yeah, and that's what it's... When you're watching it, you're just like, oh, this is like a weed dream. This is like... They all smoke weed and then they write the show. And that's what
then Regular Show is what their lives actually are.
I've never seen that one.
Regular Show, they just walk around a park saying dude to each other a lot.
Yeah.
And getting really mad at video games.
Kind of boring. At least Adventure Time, like they're going on adventures and doing things and I don't know.
And Bender's a dog.
So something else that I've been watching on Netflix, not to completely change the subject, but I've been...
We haven't gotten the subject yet.
I've been rewatching X-Files.
Oh,
just beginning to end. We're rewatching
Where
it.
Where are you now?
House.
Did you do the whole thing?
We are at... The one we just watched last night was when Dana Scully discovers the group of women who have, like, basically a book club where they just sit around and they talk about the fact that they've all been abducted and they've all had tests run on them.
And they all have cancer.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so scary. But we're at that point. And I noticed in that episode, that must have been the episode where they made the point-and-click adventure computer game that I had when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
All of the sets in that episode were the sets that you explored.
I never noticed that.
I noticed it for the first time.
That was an amazing game where it was almost like a Dragon's Lair kind of thing where you're just queuing up different video. But it was like this DVD game where you played another agent in the FBI and it was all video.
Yeah.
Like everything in it was video.
That's cool.
And you would run into Mulder and Scully, and it was like two CD-ROMs long.
Yeah.
It was huge. I played that to death.
I forget, because I think I was too young for X-Files when it was on TV. It wasn't like a thing.
Oh,
I was like
Power Rangers. Yeah, I feel like that's something you missed.
Yeah, but then like it was so big. Like my older sister, Gina, was like totally like...
You have another sister?
And yeah, older.
Wow, Gina. I thought I met
I don't think you've ever met her.
How many Browns are there? I count four.
Gina is from my mom's first marriage, so she's like a half-sister,
I guess.
But she's like substantially like removed from us. Like she was a teenager when we were all born, so like she was out like smoking pot at Stag when I was like crapping myself, you know? So it's like a little difference there.
Neither one sounds that dignified.
Right, no, they are. But speaking of Netflix, this was going to be my greatest thing of the week, but then something magical happened this week, so it's
all
not.
Right.
But Whale Wars. Has anyone watched Whale Wars on Netflix? Because it's the best thing I've ever seen.
No.
I can't say I've seen
whale
it.
Whale fight?
I've seen...
You'd think so.
I've seen the South Park episode that is a parody of it.
Oh, okay.
I've seen that too, yeah.
Basically, it's these guys who like are kind of like terrorists-ish. And they just fight these like Japanese whalers like in the Arctic Ocean. But it's actually like... It's like crack. I'm like addicted to this.
Is it like the
end
of Star Trek
4?
Where like Greenpeace is shooting... Harpoons and boats.
It's kind of like that, except they're like...
Without
the Klingon ship, aliens, and then they're like, they'll use like stink bombs, and they actually like illegally board the ship and get held hostage, and this is like real life.
Wow.
And so much crazy stuff they're doing that like the History Channel or whoever puts this show on, maybe like National Geographic, is like, the views expressed in this show do not necessarily reflect the views of like National Geographic. Anyway, you should totally, all of you, check it out, because it is the bomb. I love this show.
I love that we can be talking about X-Files
on Netflix
and something in there. Yeah,
that's the segue.
You just used it. You just went Netflix. This is what I watch on
but
Netflix.
I was watching this recently. I just discovered this.
And whales.
Yeah, and it's like I'm like addicted. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Well, my point in bringing up X-Files, as much as I'd love to watch Whale Wars,
there's a lot of religion in X-Files.
I was just thinking, watching this literally last night, I was like, I'm so excited I'm going on this podcast tomorrow, because I don't understand how Dana Scully can still be such a strong Christian character.
Yeah.
After all of these experiences.
They write her that way in the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she wears a cross, wearing she prays. Cross and,
really? But she works for the FBI and they're checking aliens?
She's been abducted. She sees aliens.
Well, the show is that David Duchovny totally believes in aliens.
Yeah.
And Gillian Anderson has been assigned to him, and she's a medical doctor and a scientist. And she's usually the one that's like, well, you know, it could just be this. This guy could just have like a radiation treatment and he's not actually a werewolf.
Right. But then, she's supposed to tone him down. She's supposed to show him that not everything is aliens, not everything is supernatural. But she's proven wrong most of the time.
But then also the show runs 8-9 years
later. Yeah, I was going to say, so when the show ends, is she like, yeah, aliens, they exist?
Or is she like... When David Duchovny left and they brought on like Robert Patrick, she was more of like, no, I've met aliens.
Yeah, she had to because she was the only one left.
But yeah, you know what? The Christian religion they just kind of toyed with, they never really talked about that much. It's kind of like Nightcrawler. Like every now and then they're like, Nightcrawler's very Catholic.
Yeah.
And it's just...
That's the thing is because when they write it
like
in...
the devil, and it seems very forced and then it just goes away. It's never a central part of their character.
Yeah. Right. It seems like whenever they try, it doesn't fit in with the rest of the universe. Even going back to Thor, I'm surprised how little everyone is phased. Like, this is a deity. Like,
yeah.
Guys, for real, he's sitting in our compound fighting crime with us. He is a deity. And no one, like, everyone just accepts that.
Yeah. And that's what they've been good about in the Thor movies and even in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when they did the Thor tie-in. They're like, every now and then they're like, aliens rained down on us.
Yeah.
In the middle of New York, and a god is walking around.
Right.
Like, we're totally screwed
now. I think they do a good job, and I've seen it in the comics. They did it in some Ultimate stuff. They did it in Walter Simonson's run. They did in a few comics where it's like, Thor pretty much comes out. He's like, yeah, I'm the Asgardian god of thunder. And then people are like, ah, Thor, he's crazy. And then other people will be like, ah, he's a mutant. Ah, he's a crazy person. Ah, he's, you know, he's just an alien.
Yes, I always got the impression in the Ultimates, and I didn't follow it as far as you did. I read the first two, the Mark Millar ones.
Yeah.
And it was like, he was just a crazy hippie who had a crazy hammer.
Yeah. Well, then the end, they're just like, no, he is from Asgard. But then they don't really say if that's another dimension or, you know, space. And I think that's kind of Marvel's way around it. Is like, sure, he's a god or he's the inspiration of that because he's thousands of years old, but he's just a space alien.
And I like Marvel's interpretation of Asgard when they finally had to reveal. And they're like, well, actually, Asgard's a planet, but they've been coming here for thousands of years.
Right,
and
exactly.
They're really powerful.
In that way.
So, yeah, the Norse think they're gods, and to us, they still are.
Right.
But then we don't have to get into... Because I think the big problem with religion is every religion is teaches the people who believe in it that this is it.
Yeah, there's really no... And I'm not a theological person, or I don't know. I'm not experienced in religion.
I think
but
if you were, you could say it.
You'd think so. but it's basically like, yeah, it's like, I don't know any religion that's like, well, we have our God and all those other gods people talk about, those are real too. They all kind of hang out together. It's like, no, our gods are the gods, and there aren't any other gods or God.
I remember being in Catholic school saying, so everybody who's not Catholic is going to hell. Everybody.
Yeah.
And they did not want to answer that.
Right.
Because then, you know, you're 8 years old and you have a Jewish friend and you just go, well, when you die, you go to hell.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a way to keep the membership roster up.
I think so. It's just it's a weird...
Don't leave.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that's probably the big loss leader, like why people are leaving the church when you're like, these people you know and love, they're going to hell. Like when my priest, when I was going to church, was like, the homosexuals are going to hell. And I'm like, but my sister and my brother are gay, and my, you know, it's just like, all right, well.
And they're the nicest people.
And it's just like, they're my favorite people, so it's like, I'm done here.
Yeah.
They make it real easy. But yeah, in comics, it's like, it doesn't really, it gets touched on more in like the indie things, like Preacher, where it's like, all right, we're going to do some crazy ideas about heaven and hell and religion.
I love Preacher. Preacher's my favorite book of the 90s. I think it's the best book that was produced in that decade.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And kind of the whole conceit was in that book is that God is real and he does not give a shit about you.
Yeah.
And he doesn't give a shit about you so much that he just quit and left.
Right. And it's kind of what his kind of thought was, is like, you know, there's the creation and then he's doing all that stuff with Jesus and knowing all that crap. But that was like thousands of years ago. So maybe God's just like a little baby and he got really bored with this toy. And now he's off in the other side of the universe doing something else. And it's just like, because who says God's like all knowing? Maybe he's just a little baby God.
Maybe started other universes.
Child. Yeah, exactly.
There's your Vertigo book.
There you go.
There you go.
I'll write that up.
I'll write it for you. Then you draw it.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a lot of space and hands.
Empty thing. It's like a Green Lantern
pointing.
Myth. Where it's
lots of pointing.
Lights.
lights and the, it's like the beginning the of hand the hand holding the cosmos or whatever.
Yeah, it's like the beginning of the DC universe. Yeah. Krona. Krona saw a hand and then he went crazy and killed all the other Guardians.
I feel like that would make you go crazy a little bit.
Maybe. That's what made the Master crazy, too. You had to look into the beginning of time.
The Doctor Who guy?
Yeah,
the evil Doctor Who. Do they do a lot of religion in Doctor Who?
No, they stick more to history.
Yeah.
I think to sidestep that. Like, I can't remember him ever talking about, like, going and meeting Jesus.
I'm thinking about that. Yeah. I'm pretty big into Doctor Who, and I'm sort of going through my Rolodex of episodes, and that was kind of one of my points, is how a lot of TV, comic, media universes just don't address it. They just, it's easier to pretend
to just
that it's just
it. Yeah.
Right. Because Doctor Who's gone to the Roman Empire.
Right.
And he's gone around that time. He's been to Pompeii, but like he never gets near it.
Yeah, I think it just is, it's like you run the risk, I think, you know, if you go and visit Jesus or Muhammad or whoever, it's like you run the risk of either pissing people off or alienating
viewers.
Oh, you'll
definitely piss people off, yeah. No matter
Absolutely.
What you do.
And I just think it's like you said, Lauren, it's just like, he's just, well, let's just not do this at all. Let's go have him, you know, visit
the
Egyptians.
And that is such a strange truth to me, too, given how many decisions are made in this world in real life based on people's religious beliefs. It so colors, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. Neighborhoods, how people spend their money, you know. Everything.
Yeah.
That
right.
For it to be so not present in like the biggest sci-fi
and culture,
TV show of
yeah.
all time is strange.
Yeah. And Star Trek tried to play it both ways, where they were, there's been more than a few times where they've said that Star Trek is an atheistic universe, where they said we move beyond such superstition. But then they'll still say, like every now and then they'll still say, you know, they'll still say God damn it, or they'll have Christmas. You know,
yeah, well, yeah. You'll come across a planet. We were talking about Firefly mm-hmm. before we started recording, and there is an episode of Firefly where there is a planet that thinks River is a witch, and they try to burn her. And there is a planet where Mal gets a wife based on, you know, a religious tradition going on the planet.
Right.
But then
there's a planet where they think Jane is a superhero.
Right, yeah. And so I think that's a really interesting way to handle it, the idea that there are some sects of the universe where this is still a thing, but in the more civilized, universally connected just areas, it's not a thing.
And that's what's tough now, because we're global, and the whole thing about Firefly was making it a Western in space, and in the time of the Old West, really until the later 20th century, people weren't as in touch with other civilizations as much, so you could just kind of have your own set of beliefs.
Yeah,
and that would be all you knew, and nobody, and you wouldn't run into anybody who would tell you different until people started moving to big cities.
Yeah,
you know, and then growing up in a Chicago or a New York where there's all different types, you have to learn how to do that. And now that we're just all connected all the time, and
you can't avoid that
no,
stuff.
And with
anymore.
And with yeah. mass media, so mass media is very afraid to say this one's right because, as we were saying, it automatically says everything else is wrong.
Yeah, because it's not inclusive. It's disclusive, you know? And right. I think it's something interesting, I think, about Christmas is like the natural evolution, it seems, of Christmas is separate from... There's like Christmas with trees and presents and Santa Claus and all that crap. And then there's Christmas with Jesus' birthday or
right.
whatever. And it's two separate things because there's the families who will put up a tree and have presents and do all that stuff. And then there's the family that's going to set up like the manger outside.
Right.
And you usually mm-hmm. won't see the family who sets up the manger with like the three wise men and all that crap. They're not going to put Santa Claus and reindeers out there too. Right. Cause it doesn't
have
make
you been
sense.
To the suburbs.
Somebody put out everything that blinks.
Yeah. Anything that blinks.
Yes.
I've seen a couple of those.
Really? That they mix it.
Well, not mixed, but this third of our backyard is for
oh,
the manger.
Jesus.
And then over here is the reindeer.
You look at my shelves and Hellboy's over there and Indiana Jones is over there and Batman's over there. That's their lawn.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'll watch Hellboy, Batman, Indiana Jones team up, but I don't want Jesus and Santa Claus to team up. You know what I mean? It's like I don't care about that fiction.
They do on South Park.
Yeah, well, of course they do.
Well, Hellboy's another perfect example was one of the reasons he had such a hard time, Gilmore had such a hard time getting that made is because it had the word hell in it. And you were saying Art and Franco's book.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Art and Franco did Tiny Titans, and it was really popular. And then when we went to order Little Hellboy, we ordered the same numbers because it's Art and Franco. It's a great book.
And it is a great book.
And it doesn't sell. And I've literally talked to parents around. They were like, oh, where's Tiny Titans? I'm like, oh, it got canceled. But they've got this new book called Little Hellboy. And the parents like, oh, I'm not buying something called Hellboy for my child. And it's like,
it's,
I don't know.
The word hell, and I mean, look at poor Hellboy. He looks...
He's adorable. He's,
I know, and but he looks like it's very, very strong devil imagery.
And, but not the way Art and Franco do him. They're in a playground.
Right, and it's like he's hanging out with like Lobster Johnson.
Yeah, like, I love it's that. So damn cute.
But it's, I remember even being a kid, and I went through, I don't know, however many years of Catholic school one man can tolerate. And it's, I remember like you said hell was like a bad word. And it's like, it's so right. strange.
It was
it's
a
like,
curse.
It's a weird word to be a curse word, I think, where it's like,
considering they teach you that it is an actual place where you could actually go.
Yeah.
But you can't say the word.
They treat it like it's Voldemort.
Yeah, where it's like, we can't talk about it, but like, it's there.
Yeah.
It's like that place we don't talk about.
I think the only reason,
called by name.
I think the only reason they say don't say it is because really the only phrase where people will say it is go to hell.
Go to hell, yeah.
You go to hell.
Or this place is hell.
Although I've learned in my travels through this world that the phrase drop dead works a lot better than go to hell.
Does it?
Oh, it hurts people more.
Does it?
Because you know what? You don't have to get their belief system into it. Right. Everybody's going to drop dead.
Gonna
I just want your mortal form to not exist anymore.
Yes,
that's just what I want.
Those were, at one point in my life, those were the two last words I said to a roommate.
Drop dead? That's Ooh. Awesome.
Never heard
I never
want
to get to that point with my roommates.
Yeah, well, he drank the rent and ran away.
No, I'm doing that right now. Yeah, I always thought, and it's, I haven't had a chance to use this yet, but it's in the old Rolodex, is in Ghostbusters, Rick Moranis' character gets he yells at like a horse and runs away, and the guy's like, ah, get out of here, you're creep, and he's like, you'll perish in flames, and I want to tell somebody that you're going to perish in flames.
Yeah, but I feel like that guy wins because he just goes, what an asshole.
What an asshole.
That dude was crazy.
Yeah.
Right, but I mean, I'm waiting for it. So, you know, who's ever going to piss me off? That's coming.
You will perish in flames. I feel like that is such a nerd response, though, where you think, I'm going to take the lexicon of Sauron. And you're like, and it's going to devastate you. And they're just going to go,
nerd.
Yeah.
Nerd.
I've been planning this for years and it wasn't very effective.
Yeah.
I think that the scariest thing to me with sci-fi and mythology is because the tropes can be so interchangeable, a lot of people think that is an indication that religion is real. My dad does not like Joseph Campbell. We were talking about Hero of a Thousand Faces, you know, the hero's journey. And he said, I hate that book because I said, well, it shows kind of the framework of storytelling. Like as a writer, I love it. He goes, yeah, but then he puts Jesus in it. And and to him, that's Joseph Campbell just coming out as an atheist and going, see, Jesus isn't real because you can put him on that map. And that's true. But then again, I was just having this conversation with Mike Morrissey, who's been on the show, how all biopics are the same. Like I realized a few years ago, I was watching Ray and then I was watching Walk the Line and I felt like I was watching the same movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how is this possible? These two guys are real and they've lived different lives.
Right.
You know, and everything that's happening in this movie happened to that guy, but I feel like I'm watching the same damn movie. And Mike Reese was saying, cause there's a style to the biopic where you take somebody's life and you go, okay, well, this fits this part and this fits this part and this fits this part.
It's like a formula.
Yeah. So calling Jesus mythology doesn't necessarily say it didn't happen, but it fits it as well as King Arthur or sure. Batman or yeah. Superman.
Well, and when you're talking about the formula, particularly of those two biopics, because I've seen them both, I think it's less about what is included and more about what is excluded.
Right.
If you read everything that was left out of Ray,
amount
of the more women, more children.
Ray Charles was a very different character than Jamie Foxx portrayed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I connect this to, I just interviewed Peter Davison, the Fifth Doctor, at Chicago TARDIS. And he was saying every actor who wants to play the Doctor reaches inside themselves and finds the best parts of who they are and discards everything that might be slightly dodgy. And if all we're doing with our heroes is finding the best parts of ourselves, they're all going to look kind of the same. All those biopics are going to look the same.
Because we all respond to the same good things.
Yeah.
But then when those parts start to come out, then everybody's just shocked. Like every time you hear bad things about JFK, people are devastated.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, it's like
because
they build these
while he
up.
Was alive, they had discarded you know, the fact that he's banging Malin or whatever. Yeah,
right. You want to believe in the best of those people, particularly, you know, when they're killed before yeah. their time.
Yeah, I think at any young tragedy where you see like assassination mm-hmm. or, you know, somebody dies really young, you know, like Paul Walker, everyone's going nuts because Paul Walker got in a car crash and died. Well, how did he do that? Well, he was fucking speeding
yep.
and playing Fast and Furious in real life. And it's a tragedy that he died. But if I did that, people would be like, well, what a fucking asshole. He killed himself, you know, drag yeah. racing or whatever. And
but
it's
you
like,
didn't make a cool movie.
That's yeah, the, that's all about you know? That's all about the equity that he earned.
But
yeah.
but it's so weird because it's like Paul Walker had made like, what, 3 Fast and the Furious movies or whatever? It's
like, no, like 6. They were shooting the 7th one.
But what I'm saying is this isn't like like Meryl Streep died in a... Do you know what I'm saying? It's like there's Meryl Streep, like an Academy Award winning beloved actress. And then there's the guy who made a bunch of action movies. And like I said, it's a tragedy. And I'm really sorry for his family and everything. But it's like... It's like...
If Meryl Streep died speeding, I would never stop talking about it.
I'm just saying for the comparison.
It's like if Judy Dench flipped over an ATV.
I'm not saying it's not a tragedy the man died, but yes, let's look at it. True. He died speeding. He died playing real life Fast and the Furious. And everyone's like this big tragedy, and it's like it's just like I am sorry that he died, and you know, but it's just like what it's like this wasn't like he was like a super awesome
right.
guy. He's not a bad guy, mm-hmm. but he wasn't Mother Teresa. It's just, he was just like an actor who fucking speeded and died. You know, it's like
right. It's sad. It's sad, but why is it a tragedy?
But why is he getting like I don't know. It's just weird.
Because there's nobody more famous
that had died.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird to me.
Yeah.
Buzzkill.
It is weird. Now, well, that's kind of a downer. But as you were saying about like taking people as whole, I just finished that biography on Jim Henson.
Yeah.
And like, you know, he's deified. You know, he died at 52.
Yeah.
But one of the things that made that book so great was I had read every book about the Muppets that I could get my hands on, and I learned so much. He was cheating on his wife constantly.
Yeah.
Like when they decided to do the Muppet Show in London, he moved to London and she didn't. And like basically, look at any hot 70s mm-hmm. guest star that's on there, you know?
And it's just
and they all keep saying, you're a genius.
Yeah. And it's just like then you buy in your own hype at some point. Right. You buy into... If everyone all day is telling you how smart you are and how awesome you are at your job and, like, you revolutionized puppets or whatever they were telling Jim Henson, it's like, that shit goes to your head. And it's like, you will go a little nuts.
And there's that, you know? Yeah, it's like Tiger Woods. It's when you talk about, oh, why did these people cheat on their wives? You know, if you are in a position where nobody wanted to date you and you worked on your craft, and then after you're married, everything exploded. Now, every woman in every room is offering it to you.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of fortitude to say no all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not right when you say yes.
No, it's never right.
But you have to be almost superhuman. You have to be like Mr. Rogers. I bet Mr. Rogers was propositioned and said no.
Yeah.
He's the only guy. But if Jim Henson can't do it.
Right.
You know, because I had that reaction of like, oh, he's supposed to be this great family man. Like Bill Cosby. You know, Bill Cosby was caught cheating on his wife while he was on tour.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's maturity or realizing that people are just people. It's like, yeah, you know what? Bill Cosby's probably on tour for years. And eventually, you know, he's having a fight with his wife and he's out in Arizona doing dates.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. You're not going to get into like this deep, meaningful domestic fight with this like fantasy person that you met while you were out on tour. So it's really easy to go to that place in your head. Like, this is the fight I had with my wife. Things right. there are very negative.
Exactly like Borat, by the way.
Great. All of these people who are telling me I'm a genius, giving me positive reinforcement, there's no negativity there. So, of course, you gravitate towards the fantasy. You gravitate towards the person who says, I'm so great.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily the person who knows you best or knows your whole person.
And it's circumstance, too, because it's how many times did he, like you said, Bill Cosby or whoever, didn't cheat or did this.
Right.
And then it's like...
But it's every day in their lives now. That's what I'm saying.
But it's like the perfect storm of he's away from his wife. His last time they talked, they had a fight. Maybe he was drinking or celebrating and he made some bad... You know what I mean? It's like anything can happen to make those choices happen. It's like the same thing when fucking Bill Clinton got impeached for cheating. Every one of those politicians in Hollywood is cheating.
That's the perfect...
And it's like... But he doesn't get impeached for bombing Syria, which is like an impeachable thing. He gets impeached for, you know, getting a BJ in the Oval Office. And it's like...
Yeah, which was always crazy.
Right, which is... Both situations are crazy because he's like this big... But now it's like Bill Clinton's like... He comes out and, you know... He's doing all this great charity work and everything. People love him. But then it's like every joke about him online is still like, I got binders full of women. And it's like, you know what I mean? It's like he'll never live that down no matter what good he does.
And what does that say? I mean, really about society. We were talking about George W. Bush earlier. He can declare a war, find no weapons of mass destruction. And
keep that war going his entire two terms.
And Bill Clinton, like, has something on the side, which, granted, is not awesome.
No, it's not. But I guarantee everyone's doing it.
We value that. Like, oh, how could he? You know?
It's crazy.
I also don't know why people are so angry at Obamacare. The guy took the country when it was at its worst, killed Bin Laden, and started to bring things back. And still was like, he's trying to give us health care. We hate him. He's not a citizen.
It's crazy, but it's
saved the auto industry and likes the gays.
Yeah. And it's just
makes
like,
me
it's
very, I'm very confused.
But it's like, you know, it goes back to like these deities where it's like you build them up or you bring them down. And it just depends on your point of view. And it's just like the same thing with like.
And maybe that's why we have this fascination with fictional characters so much. Because you know what? Batman doesn't get married and cheat. You know, Batman is unwavering in his cause for justice.
But it's like at some point I get bored with. I mean, how boring is Superman?
Superman's the most boring character there is.
Right, because
Superman
he's
can
so
do everything.
Superman unwavering. Can do everything and he has no flaws.
Right, but
and
it's
the,
like Batman.
The only flaw you can play up is like, I'm new here.
Right. And it's, but it's like at least with Batman, they can do Dark Knight and he's kind of crazy.
Well, you can push, all you have to do is just push him a couple of levels over.
And he's a bad guy.
Fought for justice. Yeah, and he's a psychopath.
Yeah, and I think that's something.
And that's interesting.
You know, right, and that's the thing is I think, you know, it's the same reason why Marvel characters were so much more interesting in the 60s than DC, because they were all, it was all the same guy. Green Lantern, Flash, they were all the same guy.
They had different powers and different costumes.
But at least, you know, Thor had these problems and couldn't ask Jane Foster out because he was a cripple or whatever. And then Matt Murdock's blind and Peter Parker hates, you know,
everything.
And, you know, the Ben Grimm's a disfigured monster. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, they're all tortured in different ways.
The people who are more, yeah, that's more interesting than, oh, they're perfect. You know, it's like, and that's the weird thing about like Kennedy going back to is like, oh yeah, he's perfect. But it's like, well, yeah, sure, whatever. But it's like, look at all these other things he was doing. But it's like, character flaws.
There was a thing, somebody put it on Facebook of like the reasons to hate John Lennon. And it's like, John Lennon was deified and they were like, well, he's, and it descended quickly. It was like, well, he was cheating on his first wife and then he met Yoko. And I was like, yeah, it was like, these are things I've come to terms with as a Beatles fan.
Yeah.
You know, he was the angry one. And then it just became like, and I don't like him.
Right.
I was like, I like George better. But it is that feeling of, you know, we build them up to tear them down. There's always that cycle. And is it because the human race has this propensity to go too far, which we always do?
Yeah.
You know, if there is nobody who leads an all-you-can-eat buffet without a stomachache.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like more is never not enough.
Yes. No, enough is never enough. The world is not enough. And that was not a good Bond movie.
That's an awful Bond movie.
You're just saying things now.
John is just saying things.
It's all free association.
This is a show of John saying things.
But because of that, do we build people up way too far? Like, do we not get to a point where they go, this guy's really good at his job.
Yeah.
And we should applaud him for that. It's always like, he's a genius. He's amazing. And then we get to a point where we are now sick of, we're now resentful of that person.
George Lucas.
Yeah.
There you go. But it's like, you know,
we were just saying today, I am so excited that there might be a 50th Indiana Jones because George Lucas won't be involved.
Nothing to do with it. But like, that's interesting. Think about that. George Lucas was like the past version of Joss Whedon, right? So
really?
Well, no, hang on
a second. He was the next version of Walt Disney.
But think about it. He was doing Star Wars. He did Indiana Jones. It's like, at what point do people start hating George Lucas? And it's like, okay, maybe the Christmas special.
Willow.
Or maybe... When he re-released all those Star Wars things,
special
like,
editions, and
changed
then,
how Han,
I think Phantom Menace was the big breakup.
But it's like, so Joss Whedon should be headed for an iceberg called fans are going to hate him.
Yeah, called Avengers 2.
Maybe.
Ooh.
But that's what I'm saying. It's just like, you know, you said, it's like, you know, you build these people up, and they become like this deity level just so we can just tear them down.
Yeah, I mean, and there's nobody has a life that doesn't
No one's immune
go
to it.
Down.
And you know what it is? Because they're fucking people. You know, it's very simple. It's just like
we were talking about in D4. You can't make perfect movies over and over
back
and over.
Back to back to back.
Yeah. Eventually, one of them is going
a
to
stinker.
Suck.
Yep.
Right. And that's how I feel about Indiana Jones, is I feel that first movie is perfect, and every sequel is flawed.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? But they're all, but I find them interesting where they're all flawed in different ways. Like,
yeah,
the second one is like too much of a horror movie. The third one's too much of a, like a buddy comedy. The fourth one's too much of a wacky sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know, they never hit that perfect tone that first one hits.
I think that's the nature of the sequel. You mentioned Anchorman 2, and any right. review I've heard of that is sort of like, the jokes are okay, but they don't hit, because that first movie comes to its beauty almost accidentally.
Right.
And then when you try to hit that again by planning and writing and actually making a concerted effort to recapture that sort of accidental magic, you can't.
Yeah, yeah, and comedies are the hardest sequels to make.
Think like The Hangover.
Because you, with an action movie, it's very easy to go, we'll throw more money at it,
yep.
we'll do a much bigger action sequence, you know, we'll expand the world. It's like going from Iron Man 1 to Iron Man 2.
Yeah, Indiana Jones, there's a different religion, a different continent. Yep. There's something else.
But with
else
comedies,
we can do.
It's, you have to make it funnier, yet you're telling the same joke twice.
Yeah.
And so no one likes
that's
to
really
hear
difficult.
The joke
I
twice.
Just watched, did you ever see Wake Up Ron Burgundy?
No.
It's this weird experiment. It's an extra on the DVD where they made a second movie out of all the alternate jokes.
Oh.
And they had a subplot. They had a subplot that they threw away with like this radical group that like Maya Rudolph's in. And they just kind of crafted around that plot. And they got another 90 minutes out. But
wow.
It's not as great. Like, there's some really funny moments in it.
Sure.
And there's a lot of people that are in Wake Up Ron Burgundy that got cut out of Anchorman. Like, Amy Poehler's in it. Justin Long is in it. Fred Armisen is in it. And you could see, watching the two together, you could see at one point, this movie was a three-hour mess.
Yeah.
And they just were, they managed to hone down to the best stuff and keep it tight. But I will say the things I'm hearing about Anchorman 2, I still want to see it because they're saying, well, it is funny, which you never hear about comedy sequels. They're always Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
You know?
Like that's the gold standard.
Yeah. Or Men in Black 2, which it's the exact same note as Ghostbusters
2. I don't know. Yeah. But it's like, I don't know. It's just like you said, you just can't recapture, especially something there's no expectations too. For Anchorman, there's no expectations. That's a completely original yeah. idea.
And Will Ferrell was making a movie every year, and this was just the next movie.
The next
he was
one. And it's, you know, but then going into the sequel, it's like it's loaded. You have loaded expectations now.
Yeah, the stakes are so much higher.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like The Hobbit.
I was going to say, it's just like The Hobbit.
And I think the problem with The Hobbit is that Lord of the Rings went to Peter Jackson's head. He didn't want to cut it down. He didn't want to tell the simple story that book is about.
Yeah.
He wanted to make it this huge thing. And I will say the second is a lot better because I think he took some of the criticisms to heart. It moves faster. There's more interesting things.
But it definitely moves faster and there's less, like,
but
you
it's
don't
not,
have to watch the dwarves have an entire meal.
Yeah, it's not Lord of the Rings and he's still trying to make The Hobbit Lord of the Rings.
I just want
to
know what's he going to, like, what can a man like that where it's like, 10 years of his life as Lord of the Rings. Like, what do you do when you finish The Hobbit? And that's done. Then what do you do?
Right.
Is he going to do...
That's what he did. He did The Lovely Bones, which nobody saw.
Yeah.
And then he was resisting it because he knows he's going to get judged this way that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So he got Guillermo del Toro to direct it. But then it took so long to get the rights uncovered that Guillermo del Toro was like, I can't wait anymore. You know what? I'm going to go make Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
He's like, I've been waiting 3 years to make this movie. I can't wait another year.
Yeah.
Like, the studio wants to make Pacific Rim, I'm going to make Pacific Rim. And so Peter Jackson has to direct it himself.
That's wild.
And, yeah, and I think that's one of the problems. Like, I get the feeling from The Hobbit that his heart's not quite in it.
Desolation of Smaug is literally the first geek movie that I have made the conscious decision to not see. So I have no opinion on how it is, but I disliked The Hobbit so thoroughly. I thought it was so bloated and so much unnecessary action.
Yeah.
And it was just... over and over, a group of people running in a line through explosions, and then they come out the other side. Over and over and over. And like, I know my, you know, $10 at the movie theater is not going to make a difference to the profit of this franchise, but I am taking my support away from this idea.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about Man of Steel. I was like, Man of Steel was made by the guy who made Watchmen that I didn't like.
Yeah.
The Dawn of the Dead remake that I didn't like. And 300 that I didn't like about a character that I don't really like.
You're not getting my money just because I read comics.
And it's not. And at this point, now that it's on Blu-ray and people have it and can
borrow
lend it.
It
to me,
yeah.
it's not worth my 2 hours at this point. And now, And for the last month or so, I'm like, well, I guess I have to watch because Batman's in the next one. But now it's like Batman and Wonder Woman and Flash and Lex Luthor. And it's like, now I really don't care.
Yeah.
I agree. You get pushed to a point. And, you know, to bring it back to religion, I think. You enter this thing with the most honorable intentions. And as it starts to deteriorate on you, you feel like you can't leave. And you begin giving reasons like, oh, no, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Like, I watched the entire series of Smallville, and I didn't enjoy it once.
Yeah.
And every episode.
I just kept coming back. I mean, granted, I came in very late, went through it on Netflix, so I did it.
But you keep waiting for it to change and twist and go back to what you wanted.
I didn't spend 10 years waiting for it, but I spent like 3 or 4 going, well, you know, it's almost good. I like this Tom Welling. And
yeah.
Cass is good. If they just make a left turn, it'll be a cool Superman show.
Yeah.
It'll be what I thought Lois and Clark was going to be. I've been following Superman through a couple of crappy shows.
I like Lois and Clark.
Well, I like Terry Hatcher.
I was a kid, so I was like, this is exactly what I wanted. And I hated Bob Saget because he wouldn't shut up, and his show was on before Superman. It's like,
oh, America's Funniest Home Videos.
Stop the jokes. I want to see Superman.
As if that show like wasn't on a schedule.
Right. I was like, why won't Bob Saget stop talking?
Because it's 7:45. That's why he won't stop talking.
I was like, he's still making bad jokes.
Yeah, he's not a football game.
No, he's not. Yeah.
I think it's one of the reasons I hated sports, because football would always preempt everything I wanted to watch. It was always like The Simpsons would always be 10 minutes late.
Right.
Or, you know, 10 Speed and Brown Shoe.
Yep.
They preempted that for the Olympics, and I still don't forgive the Olympics.
Damn, those Olympics have been going on for hundreds of years.
I want to see Ben Vereen and Jeff Goldblum solve mysteries.
Right, meow.
Right, yeah. I love this DVD streaming DVR age. It's interesting. It seems like the, I feel like we've gone wildly off topic, but I think we're all kind of talking about perfection. It seems like, because religion is this, I know the Catholic religion, in my upbringing, the Catholic religion is you are flawed, you are not perfect. And you must atone for that and give yourself up to God who is perfect.
It's a really downer thing.
I went to Catholic school through grade school and through high school. And we were talking about globalization. The second I got into college and got to take Chinese religion and culture, and the second I got to go to New Orleans and go to some Baptist stuff and really explore further, I can't abide by that anymore. I can't abide by the, this is the one way.
Right.
Feel guilty if you think of anything but this one way.
And that's the thing that always bothers me about religion, is that it's like going into a restaurant and you've blocked out the entire menu but one thing.
Yeah.
And then you go, this one thing we offer is the best thing ever.
Right. And but don't look at all those other things on the menu.
What else do you make? We don't make anything else.
Right.
We make chicken cacciatore. Right. Really? Do you make a fettuccine? No.
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 You can put chicken in that. If you do, you go to hell.
Like, have wow. you do you guys read The Oatmeal, or are you familiar with The
yeah.
Oatmeal?
It's I don't know
a
what that is.
Yeah, it's a web comic, and a lot of the time The Oatmeal is about either bears, dogs, or Nikola Tesla. But he
it's a great combination.
Yeah, I really feel like you at least should be reading it.
Yeah,
I should know.
But he did a whole thing on almost a flow chart, like, are you good at your religion, or should you stop with your damn religion? And it was all about, are you hateful towards others? Yes or no. Do you infringe on other people's lifestyles? Yes or no. And they had this whole bit where a guy was sitting on the computer researching Scientology. He goes, oh man, they believe in this alien Xenu and it's crazy. We all know the real truth is God built the earth and put 2 naked people on it and then they ate some fruit. Like, haha, high five. And it's such an interesting thing to read, because I think if you're being honest with yourself, everyone's religion is just as weird as everyone else's.
Yeah.
It's all a strange mythology that, especially if it goes back to a point in civilization where people could easily believe that.
Yeah.
Because that's why religion and science have this friction.
And I always find
them.
That weird that religion and science, because if you actually talk to people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, you listen to these guys.
I love Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He's one of my favorite people. And all these guys are always about like, oh, space is this and this is civilizations. But it's like they all are still religious. Like they have beliefs. And it's just because I believe that there's aliens out there doesn't mean that some kind of cosmic being didn't kind of put it into effect. And I'm kind of the same way. It's like, I don't know what's out there, but I don't think when you research and you read about how precise everything had to be for life to happen on Earth and how we haven't found it in the endless cosmos out there, it's like, what other conclusion can you come to other than, well, something must have sparked that? It's not fucking a roll of the dice. It's the chances are too, it's just too, the probabilities remote. Don't make sense.
Well, that's how I think religion can and will survive, is if those with the religious beliefs adapt. If you are willing to take in scientific evidence, take in new advancements in technology, new discoveries, and somehow adapt your beliefs to fit that, you can have your religion all day for what I care. It's people who say, you know, I don't believe in dinosaurs, or no, I don't, carbon dating, nah, the Earth is 2,000 years old. That's what I have a problem with. If you can adapt.
Wasn't there some churches that say God put those there to trick us?
Yeah.
To test us. And it's like what's the argument about the, it was a joke Futurama made. It was like about evolution. And they were like, you can't prove that there's a link between a monkey and a man. And then he's like, well, actually, there's this one. Right. But you can't prove a link between a monkey and that thing. It's like, well, actually, there's this one. And
there's like 20 levels.
Yeah. And it's just like, because we're missing one out of 30 levels of evolution, they're like, it's not real. And it's like, because we can't find that shit.
And that's the thing, coming from a writing background, you are trained to, when you come up with an idea, is to ask questions about it to see if it works. You know, I have this idea about a guy who flies. Well, does he fly with a jetpack or does he fly with wings? You know, if he flies with wings,
he just flies. Shut up.
Yeah. And if you can't, and that means the guy that flies isn't getting made.
Right.
Because everything you create has to be subjected to questions until it's tight.
You gotta justify it.
Until it's given to the world. And if you cannot justify those things rationally, then they don't make sense. And I feel like I'm not anti-religion. I'm not even agnostic. I was raised Catholic, and I kind of got fed up with these questions not being answered.
Yeah.
And now I just kind of don't look that deeply into it, and I'm not much of a joiner anyway.
Right.
But I feel that if you can give me a compelling argument that works, then I will buy it.
Yeah.
This is also why arguments in my household don't come to a peaceful resolution.
Right.
Show me the logic. Show me the wireframes.
Yeah. This
Where's the flow chart of why we should go to dinner tonight?
Even something like when we were doing the store was, you know, Karm's going to have a way of thinking about how things should be, and I'll have a different way. And normally we pretty much line up. But even when we were first starting, it was like, look, we're inevitably going to come to disagreements. We have to agree right now. The logical argument wins no matter what. Because it's only for the best of the store. Like, what can we say is going to make the store better, or service people better, or help people better? And that's the idea. And it's something that's always bothered me about Scientology, is there's a lot of people really invested in that. There's a lot of people that really subscribe to that. But then, all right, we'll look at it, though. This is, you know, a science fiction writer invented this, and he has a famous quote that I'm going to misquote him, but it's something like, if you want to make a lot of money, invent religion. And then he invented a lot of religion, and then he made a lot of money. So it's like, what do you think he was trying to do? He didn't talk to an alien or something. He wanted to make a quick buck.
It's very hard to not read ulterior motive into that.
Yeah, and it's just like, I just don't understand. Like, I'm not a smart, super educated person, but I can go and find that quote and be like, yeah, Scientology, probably not like the real deal. But then all of these like people, I would think, well, John Travolta or whoever is like a celebrity, he has to be smart enough to keep his career going. And, you know, you can make the joke, it's not going anywhere, but it's like, so is the other guy.
Go to massage parlors.
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know. It just seems stuff like that is just kind of silly.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. All right. We barely talked about Christmas. So Christmas, this will come out. No, it's come out right before Christmas. It'll come out
Christmas
right before
Eve,
Christmas
Eve.
Yeah, because this will be the next one. So I think everyone's going to say what they're looking forward to about Christmas and what they're not looking forward to. You hate Christmas, don't you?
Yes.
You hate Christmas like I hate Thanksgiving.
I hate Christmas.
Yeah, I still hate Thanksgiving.
I love Thanksgiving.
I hate Thanksgiving so much.
Sweet argument, guys.
Right. Well, now it's a 2-hour podcast.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, I won't get into it because it's, you know, the podcast has got to wrap up here.
But what do, well, okay, so what do you hate the most, or what is the only thing you like about it? If you got to center it on
if
something.
If I had to like one thing about Christmas, eggnog. With brandy.
Eggnog's pretty good.
That's
daring.
Eggnog without alcohol is still pretty good.
It is, but, you know, why not just throw the brandy in there?
Yeah, that helps. So you're looking forward to eggnog?
Yeah, I've been enjoying eggnog for a few weeks now.
And what are you not looking forward to?
Everything else. Literally everything else. Wow.
But you
Christmas.
Like getting together with your family. You like Thanksgiving. That's you're going to get together with your family.
But I can get together with family any old time. Like,
yeah, but now you have to. And it's something you like to do. So
I like my immediate siblings and parents. There's a lot of extended family that can go fuck themselves. So, and I think the having to meet with people that the accident of birth puts me in the same room as. I hope they do. Because I'll name names. You want me to name names?
No, I don't want you to name names.
Don't do it.
Because I don't want to run into any of these people and go, oh, this guy.
This is the guy that he doesn't like. Yeah. So because I hate Christmas, my greatest thing in the world was going to be Whale Wars, which takes place in the Arctic. So it's kind of like Christmas and there's whales and penguins and shit. But it's actually last night I got a picture text from my brother, and my phone is like 12 years old. So it seizes up when it's a mass text. So he had sent me a picture file that I couldn't open. And then my phone was having like a seizure, and I'm like, oh, I'm getting tons of responses from whoever else he sent that picture to. And I'm like, oh my God, my brother just proposed to his girlfriend. And then I got a bunch of texts from Lisa and David, who know my phone is shit. And they were like, hey, Michael just proposed to Tanya. We're going out to Deja Brew to have some drinks. And that was awesome. Like, she's great. Like, we all adore this woman. Like,
so she's not one of the ones you hate.
No, she's awesome. They've been dating like 2 years, I think. And he proposed to her last night on like one of those Chicago like cruises, on like a boat or whatever. And like, they were giving him champagne, and like the ring is ridiculous. Like, it's reflecting the sun. It's awesome. But
at night?
Yeah, at night from the, you know, dark side of the moon. Yeah. And that's my greatest in the world. It was awesome.
I saw that on Facebook. I saw like immediately Lisa and Tina were posting.
Yeah.
About it.
And David, I was getting, because I went on Facebook after I got the message and was, all right, how many notifications am I getting? It was like 23, which I don't have a lot of friends, so it's a lot. But then I talked to Tanya this morning. We all went out to breakfast, and she can't go on Facebook. There's like 400. There's all kinds of like notifications and this and that.
Like Kate Middleton.
It's crazy. But yeah, that was awesome. That's been coming a long time.
I actually, for a minute, I thought you weren't coming because I figured, well, they're all out drinking tonight.
Oh, we were out drinking tonight. Yeah. We had breakfast this morning, but I make a priority, John. I take this show seriously.
We have Scientology to dissect. Right.
I don't research any of the topics or have any idea what we're talking about when I show up, but
I'm
here.
I'm a professional.
I'm a consummate professional.
So, Lauren, what does Christmas mean for you?
Okay, I work at the Museum of Science and Industry. I hope I'm allowed to say that I'm not media trained by MSI, but we have Christmas Around the World, in which we have the big tree, the 45-foot one in the middle. It's all Disney-themed, and there's like 50 trees just all over the museum, and it's super beautiful. But this is actually leading to my least favorite part about Christmas, which is that like 2 weeks, 3 weeks after Christmas, when all of that stuff is still up and they're still playing the music, I get so psyched out by it that last year it was like January 7th and I was real tired and I looked around and saw the trees and went, oh my God, I don't have presents for anybody. Because like in my head, we had already made the loop and we were like back
there.
Christmas was coming again. And so from like December 26th until January 8th-ish, I'm just the Grinch. I just wish it would all go away. Up until that point, it's great. It's
right.
Beautiful. I recommend
it's
everyone comes
effect.
And sees it. It's after. It's like, it's over. Put it away. My favorite Christmas thing goes all year round, which is whenever I go to a big convention like C2E2 or whatever, I look for old sci-fi themed Hallmark ornaments and I buy them.
Ah.
And I have a huge collection, a shamefully large collection of my newest one this year is a Cylon from Battlestar Galactica.
The new or the old?
Old. But my favorite one is The Trouble with Tribbles, which is like a huge ornament. My hands right now, it's like a softball size ornament. And Kirk is in there buried in Tribbles. And then if you push a button, a tiny fan comes on the inside and blows all these Tribbles
That's
around
awesome.
Inside the
oh,
ornament.
Oh, it's like a snow globe?
Sort of. There's
with
no water in it.
Instead
it's
of
just,
snow.
It just goes. And this thing is this big and it weighs like 10 pounds. And so it just weighs down the side of the tree.
Incredible.
But if you get the chance, like anytime you go to a convention, just look for their old ornaments. You find the most amazing stuff.
That's awesome.
There's an Indiana Jones ornament I've always wanted, which is him bending over to collect the idol. And it's like, it's on the base
yeah.
of itself. But they used to do gorgeous Star Trek ones. They would do a ship every year that would light up.
You know what? We have, my fiance collects the ships. So we have like 12 to 15 of the Star Trek ships. And it is a damn shame because they're built so that you're supposed to unscrew one of the lights and plug the ship into the light jack. Oh. And then it'll light up and make noise. And we just got energy efficient LEDs. And they are not strong enough to power the Star Trek ships. Like, we're saving the world, but we've broken all of our enterprises.
Right.
Like, this is the worst.
See, now that would be a great idea for Hallmark to reissue all of them with their own LEDs. With LEDs.
We would buy every one. We would buy every one. They'd have, like, $500 from us.
Yeah. My orphanage was just looking for a TARDIS ornament that would light up.
Ooh, light up. Light awesome. Up we is the kicker.
Have, I'm surprised we that, have like, a light up, gotta have a TARDIS.
We have a light up Batmobile. We have a light up Batcycle.
Yeah.
I've got my favorite ornament. I have a paper mache Kermit that I got in 1981.
Oh, that's cool.
And his like little collar is cardboard and it's all dried up and brown and curled up.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are awesome. Actually, I have the opposite of you. My favorite part of Christmas is after Christmas.
Oh.
Because I like that period between Christmas and New Year's where just life has just died.
Yeah, it's like a dead zone
and
for everything.
Yeah, no one has any money because they've spent it all.
Yep.
No one is making New Year's plans till the day before.
Right.
And it's freezing.
It's freezing.
Yep.
And so nobody wants you to do anything for them. So if you go to work, you just kind of go to work and you can just hang around.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I actually have a lot of stuff that's due in the beginning of January, but I know I will be left alone to do it.
Yeah.
And my commute's 10 minutes, so I can just, like, it'll be quieter at work than it'll be at home. And I also love, I usually get, like, some kind of DVDs or Blu-rays, and I'm too busy now, but it used to be I would get, like, a season of Star Trek for Christmas, and that week I would just watch it. It would just be like, next one,
yeah,
next one, next one. And I feel like it's the only time of the year that I can just truly relax. I used to get really excited because, when I was a kid, I'd be, like, just waiting to get the Millennium Falcon. Because I would pick one thing and it would make my mother insane.
Oh yeah, and you have kids to buy for now.
Yeah, but when you become a parent, it's kind of like being promoted from the audience to the backstage crew.
Yeah,
like you're constantly like, keep it going. Do we have this? Is this ready to go? Is this wrapped? Is this here? Like you go from being the two old men in the Muppet Show Theater to being Kermit.
Yeah,
The two old men are much more relaxed.
Yes,
they're just sitting there.
They
going,
just show up.
They just show up and go, this sucks.
So what I do on the podcast?
The best part of Christmas is when it's over.
Right.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, Kermit the Frog is freaked out.
Yeah,
which is if you go on my on our YouTube channel, you can see the stop motion animated film we made about Kermit losing his damn mind.
There you go.
It's 5 years ago, but it's gotten 500,000 hits. Right. It's out there. You can watch it.
Yeah.
So Merry Christmas, everybody.
Bah,
so you hate Christmas.
All of it.
You hate after Christmas.
Yes.
And I like Christmas when it's over. I feel like none of us has the true Christmas.
No.
You like Christmas until it begins to annoy you.
I mean, to be fair, that's how I feel about most things.
Yeah.
Just really across the board in my life.
I feel like you should never own a puppy.
I've thought about that. Mm-hmm. We have a dog park right by our house, and we want a dog so bad, and we talk ourselves out of it every time. Because I think once that novelty's gone, then I have 15 more years.
That's how I feel about kids.
You have at least 4 years of them jumping. Yeah, kids.
Because that's like, oh, cool, I'll play with Dave's kids, I'll play with your kids, and then it's just like, well, I can give those back. I don't have to take those. Like, I don't have that extended responsibility that I can't keep a house plan alive.
There are times I look at Sebastian and I go, okay. It's been 6 years and it's starting all over again,
right.
But I'm 6 years older.
Right. I don't have the energy I had 6 years ago.
I look at Ben and I'm like, I see all the work I put into you. You can watch Temple of Doom in the other room.
Right.
And not feel sad. And I can walk out and I'll go, you want to watch The Last Crusade? And I'll say, yes. But it took a lot of years to get to that. Now I got to do that all again with Sebastian.
When is that baby going to get a job? Seriously.
Yeah, we were just watching Scrooged last week, which is one of my favorite Christmas movies ever. Have you seen Scrooged? Because you
which
avoid
ones?
Christmas movies. The Bill Murray one.
Mm-mm. Yes.
Bill Murray playing Scrooge.
I've seen that.
There is a great moment where he goes to Christmas Past, and his dad is Brian Doyle Murray, so already I'm sold. And he's like a butcher. And he comes home and he throws a bag at him, and he's like, Merry Christmas. He goes, what is it? 5 pounds of meat. He's like, but what? He's like, I wanted a choo-choo train. Go buy a choo-choo train. But I'm four. All I hear is excuses. My back hurts. My wife is sick. I'm only four. That's why I will lend it to you. It will be your favorite Christmas
movie. That's how I
feel
about Christmas.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
It'll speak to you.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, as always, you can follow me at Not On My Book. Again, lots of followers. Almost doubled my amount of followers since the show's been on.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping you're all listening. Getting a lot of people that I think want to be on the show. And you're all welcome. You can all come on
the
show.
Everyone
can come on. Follow us at Facebook page. Our Facebook page is getting really busy, which I love.
I credit that to you and Dave Navarez.
Yeah, basically, most things I would put on my page now, I'm putting on that page. So we're doing a lot more than just plugging the podcast, which we do every week. Lauren, how can we find you?
Geek Girl Chicago is a Chicago Now blog, so just go to chicagonow.com and search Geek. Twitter and Facebook, you can also just find me at Geek Girl Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also all your interviews of from Chicago TARDIS are up.
Yeah, there's one more still coming, but if you go to my blog, you can see my interviews with the Fifth Doctor and the Sixth Doctor, Peter Davison and Colin Baker, and Leela is coming up, the Fourth Doctor companion. So it's been a big month over at GGC.
That's awesome. Steven?
I'm always at 19 South LaGrange Road, LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take-